Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. It is a post-match show. The United States taking on Paraguay. The United States leading Paraguay 1-0 on a penalty by none other than Bobby Wood. Tim Weah just got taken down from behind. So it's going to be one of those interesting moments here. And a booking to number 10 of Paraguay and Dearless Gonzalez. And a free kick for the United States coming up here in the final minute of regulation. Depending on how much stoppage time we're going to have, be interesting to see what's going to happen. But so far, I thought we've had an entertaining match. Great, great job so far. And we'll see what happens. See what happens in this one. But it's a free kick right now for the United States. And 3 minutes of stoppage time has been added. Free kick just over the crossbar. So nothing big there. And the United States still leading by 1-0. And once again, just barely over the crossbar by Darlington Nagbe. United States right now. Ooh, another foul there from behind. Number 6 on Rubio Rubin. Richard Ortiz now booked. And doesn't look good for Rubio Rubin. Club Tijuana, of course. Oh, it looks like he got stomped on. Oh, wow. Terrible, terrible, terrible play there. But only a booking in this one. And Rubio Rubin looks like he's okay. He's going to get up, and Darlington Nagbe now being taken out. Christian Roldan will be coming in. And I'm glad he's back up there. So Roldan subbing in for Darlington Nagbe. And there's a foul being called on the United States. DeAndre Yedlin, and whoa! DeAndre Yedlin really finding ways. We'll see what happens. And here comes a shot. Save made. Rebound. And it's wide. Oh, there was a big chance there. Very, very big chance by Nova Kovic. Could have had his first senior team goal. And that's a big opportunity. So we'll see what happens. So we'll see what happens here. It's last minute of play. In stoppage time, actually, they're past the 3 minutes. Paraguay right now got a free kick just on the outside of the area, along the near side for the U.S. But once again, this is a big moment here for the United States. If they can try and get this big goal converted by Paraguay, it'll be a 1-1 draw at the end of stoppage time. This could be the last play of the match. Joining me right now, Robert Hay, talking about all the fun things going on in soccer. But here comes the quick cross, and oh, just made it, saved by Stefan. And just off the top of the crossbar and out, the final whistle blows, and the United States will get their first victory in 2018 as they defeat Paraguay by a final of 1-0. Robert Hay joins me. Robert, what we have seen so far, I think, in this friendly is maybe it's not as bad as we thought it is, but still, though, there's still plenty of room to improve for this young roster of the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, first, thanks for having me on again, Daniel. Always a pleasure. Well, you know, it's interesting when you look at a game like this. It's something that the United States hasn't experienced in decades, which is usually this is the time when clubs are preparing for the World Cup and trying to hone their rosters and see, you know, tweak their tactics ahead of the tournament. And, of course, that's not what the U.S. is doing here. It's the U.S. is bringing out a very youthful lineup to try and look for, you know, 4 years ahead from now. So looking going into this game, I think one of the big things I looked at wasn't necessarily how these guys played as a team per se, but you know, a lot of the individual performances and how they interacted with their teammates and interplayed with their teammates. Because you know, the starting 11 we saw on the field tonight is not going to be the starting 11 in 4 years or 8 years, simply because things happen. But what I wanted to see is how these players performed against you know, a World Cup quality qualifying side, how they performed with each other, how they competed with each other, and you know, some of these individual battles that we would see throughout. You know, overall, it was a not that exciting of a game. If you're Paraguay, obviously you're not looking to do anything too crazy. You're playing with a couple of different things. You're trying not to get hurt. For the U.S., I mean, especially in the first half, you saw a team that we thought play like we thought they would, you know, a bunch of young players coming together, playing together for the first time. You know, it was kind of disjointed at the beginning, players running into each other's space and things like that. But, you know, over the 90-plus minutes, I think you saw some good individual performances. I think you saw some players that could have done a lot better. Overall, my takeaway is, you know, it's soccer. It's the debut of the new U.S. kit. We got to see some players in, you know, the U.S. uniform we hadn't seen before. And that's that. I mean, I think, you know, I'm down, you know, it sounds like I'm downplaying this, and I kind of am. It's because there really isn't much you can read into this, I think, long term. I think that there's going to be a temptation to sit here and say, you know, draw these grand conclusions from a 1-0 win over Paraguay. But honestly, I mean, this was just a friendly. It was a good chance to see some players and talk about how they did, what some of these players can improve on. And that's that. I mean, I really don't want to draw too many long-term things from this match, which I have a feeling is what a lot of people are going to want to do tonight.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think we should be, you know, making any, like, rash decisions or anything like this. I mean, look, what we're looking right now in 2018, sadly, we're not going to a World Cup, and I think that's the number one thing here. We're not going to a World Cup. So we're going to have to see who we have in the youth levels that can make this transition. And I think so far we've had a couple of players that have made this transition, and they're doing very well. Obviously, we have to talk about Tyler Adams, and it's not so much he's a New York Red Bull player, but I think you can admit it, and many of us can admit it as well. Tyler Adams has probably the most upside we have ever seen a U.S. player have. I think Tyler Adams right now, you know, can make this jump, and he has made this jump, and I still think he can, you know, go deeper and deeper into a possible you know, Gold Cup roster in 2019. Because right now, what we are seeing from Tyler Adams, who's getting plenty of minutes as a starter in the midfield for the New York Red Bulls, and as Jesse Marsh has said, you know, before the season got started, that he is willing to develop players. And so far, Tyler Adams has fit that description. And I think at the same time, this is what the U.S. men's national team wants, what U.S. soccer is looking at. Tyler Adams is definitely that bright spot in Major League Soccer and for the U.S. Men's National Team.
Yep, I think he's definitely showed a lot of positives in the match today. I think there were some times when he might have reacted a little too slowly and then not made some of the runs he did, especially early in the game. But I think, you know, the highlight was certainly his run to draw the penalty that got the U.S. their one goal. Great pass and, you know, following up that pass with a great run. And it, just making that play happen was excellent. But also I think the impressive thing is in the second half, you know, him playing a little bit more out to the right and finding space out on the right-hand side and making plays there. I mean, honestly, you know, he was getting fouled a lot in the second half, and that was simply because the Paraguay defenders were getting tired of his runs and getting tired of tracking back and defending him. And I think that's the highest compliment you can pay to a player is they just got fed up with defending him. So I think he showed a lot today. You know, tonight, I think that his star certainly is high. And for anybody who hasn't watched, you know, an MLS match or seen him play, I think, you know, this was a pretty good match to show why everybody's so excited about him. But, yeah, I mean, I think in Tyler Adams' case, this is another example of a player who just needs to keep playing well individually. And, you know, I certainly didn't see anything tonight that would diminish his standing in the U.S. national team setup. You know, I think it's nice, you know, it's like, you know, with MLS, there's always, if you're an MLS fan, or you're a fan of an MLS team specifically, there's always these players that you sit there and you really enjoy watching and but you have in the back of your mind where this guy's going to go. It's just a matter of time, you know? And I think if you're a Red Bull fan, that's what you have with Tyler Adams. You enjoy him while you can, because you know, one day he's going to go somewhere big and do great things. So enjoy seeing him for a cheaper ticket price in person.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And of course, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously, you know, very interesting tweets in this matchup. Of course, Tyler Adams, like, I don't know how many years he has left on his current deal. Obviously, it's only $75,000 on this contract. But still, though, you would like to think the New York Red Bulls, depending on what happens, obviously, but I would like to think that Jesse Marsh and sporting director Dennis Hamblett's going to find a way to keep Tyler Adams a little longer than normal. But obviously, you know, he does have that great ability to do something spectacular here, so we'll see what happens. But all I can say is that, you know, for Tyler Adams, definitely the sky is the limit. And, you know, he doesn't get sprung unless that great ball by Marky Delgado gives Tyler Adams that opportunity to go on the attack late in the first half, within the final minutes of regulation time in the first half. He does get tripped up by the keeper. It is a penalty that lets Bobby Wood convert it. But still, though, you know, that's a great combination play right there with both Adams and Delgado. A little give and go, and then Delgado just springs him, and he just beats the last defender. And then, of course, it's the keeper one-on-one, and the keeper takes him down. But still, though, that's a great setup right there.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that you don't, you know, it's one of those bright spots you don't always see in these kind of friendlies. Again, with you have players that aren't used to playing together. But, you know, I think it's a compliment. You know, there will be MLS fans out there who, rightfully so, will be touting, you know, the fact that you have MLS-to-MLS connection there, and you know, shows some of the quality of the league. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of play that, you know, I would DVR and show, you know, my kids or, you know, my soccer team and say, you know, break this down, and this is how you play the game. So no doubt about that. It was certainly a highlight in an otherwise kind of dull game.
Yep, absolutely. And you know what, Paraguay, they're no slouches either. I mean, obviously they're not the national team they once were, of course. Not to say that's supposed to be a slight on Paraguay. I mean, they still have plenty of solid players coming through the pipeline. We know one Miguel Almirón that plays at Atlanta United, a great young player in his own right. And he just seems to find a way to play dangerous, even though I don't know if he was as dangerous in this game for his national team like he has been for Atlanta United. But still, though, Paraguay... still a national team in South America, nothing to sneeze at, still a dangerous side no matter what. But was, you know, I felt it was a very solid test for the kids going out there.
Yeah, I think it's certainly good scheduling by the Federation. Paraguay is, it's not necessarily the sexiest of matchups, but it's a good, like you said, good solid national team. Has some talent on there, talent that some of the U.S. men's national team players are used to seeing, and certainly should have provided a challenge to this young U.S. team. I mean, I think the temptation is to sit there and say, let's play Brazil, let's play Spain, let's play, these top teams as often as possible. That's the best way that these kids are going to get. And I say kids pejoratively, but that's the best way that these young U.S. men's national team players are going to get experience and then get ready for the next World Cup. But I mean, honestly, a Paraguay type of match is what's really needed here. It's to get some of these younger players who haven't had the national team call-ups some experience and not get their brains beat in. Play against a team where there's good individual talent and athleticism. I think I was disappointed by the way Paraguay came out, especially in the second half, and played a very physical. I mean, again, obviously they didn't want anybody injured in this match. Kind of were just doing some things to, get themselves in shape. So it wasn't necessarily the best skill matchup for the U.S. in this game. But, it's a kind of a good matchup for the U.S. In terms of just getting their players, getting some of these younger players some experience and playing against a tougher side.
No, I agree with you. And I mean, right now it's not a bad. I mean, look, you'd love to see them against maybe a Brazil, an Argentina, maybe against a Colombia that we all know has improved tremendously, in their world rankings. Maybe a Peru, maybe a France, which we're going to probably see them again anyway this coming June. So that's even better. But still, though, you want to see our kids taking on the top talent in the rest of the world. And at the moment, look, this is not too bad. Paraguay is right now like in the middle of the road, and I don't think it's a bad decision. I don't think it's a poor decision at all. I think it's they gave him a good fight, and we'll see what happens. The next friendly they play in, and for what what they need to do. So let me ask you this, and I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I know there's a lot of people that don't want Dave Sarokin to be the next manager for the U.S. men's national team, and it's mostly because of a Bruce Arena association, which once again, I'm not saying, I want Sarokin to be the next head coach of the men's national team. I'm not saying I don't want him to be the next head coach of the national team. But at the moment, I think he's more of a caretaker manager, which I think he's doing okay so far. And all I can say is this, Robert, is that I'm a little bit annoyed because, once again, I know it's a friendly, and I know you would like to see them win the game. And like you've said, this is a friendly that we really shouldn't be concentrating on the result. But, for making these subs so late in the match, I think it kind of ruins the situation that, look, it's nice that they won, obviously, but I don't know if Sarokin was going along with the game plan of, throwing out some new players out there to try and basically, throw out some names that deserve an opportunity.
Yeah, I think that was very disappointing for me. I mean, obviously, Dave Sarokin is in a tough spot, depending on how you want to pronounce his name, is in a tough spot where he is an interim manager and there's an outside chance he gets, this position. And of course, obviously he's trying to play for it. But on the other hand, really, what's the point of this match? I mean, if you're the U.S., you're accomplishing a couple of things in this match. Number one, getting some players their first caps with the U.S. men's national team and getting them some experience and getting them to wear the jersey. Number two, make a little bit of money in an area where the U.S. men's national team doesn't always come and play. And number three, just experiment. I mean, try some things out, move some players around, Get them playing with each other and see if you can find something in this match. And I think that was the most disappointing thing. Was not just that he waited so long to make the majority of his substitutions, especially when he had so many available, and they were playing in such a physical match, especially in the second half. But I think we saw a lack of creativity tactically. I think we saw a lack of desire to bring in different players and try different things. And you know, we treated this like this was a Gold Cup match. You know, almost like CONCACAF Gold Cup group stage match or something like that, where it's like, okay, we want to get a result, and you know, maybe we'll try a couple of things, but you know, really at the end of the day, this 1-0 win is the most important thing. And I really do hope that, you know, inside the Federation that there was this desire to come away with a result, because honestly it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a friendly, and especially in this case it doesn't matter. I'd rather the US got blasted 6-0, but played the maximum number of players and moved players around, tried some different formations and tried some different things throughout this match, not just for the sake of it, but to just experiment and see if they could find something, then win a game like this where, you know, you win 1-0, but you play with the same kind of players for 60, 70 minutes. I mean, again, we're not getting ready for a World Cup in 3 months. We're playing the long game here. And the thing that kept coming to my mind was some of the things that you talked about with, Reed Maltby last night, and Reed's perspective on U Sports, which is one of his perspectives, his talking points is the idea that the U.S. really tends to want the cream of the crop to rise to the top and stick with it and focus on that instead of the large number of youth players we have in our system. And really what I felt in this match was this was kind of a personification of that. And you know, some people might take to social media to criticize this take, but really what I felt like was saying, okay, this is our future here. So we're going to play these kids together. And then we'll get some players in at the end to get them their caps. I mean, that's just kind of the feeling that I got. It just was a bad vibe in this match. What I would much rather have seen is, you know, substitutions at halftime, you know, different players, different positions, move Tyler Adams around, let him play 5 or 6 different positions and see, you know, what happens and see who's clicking. Because again, this isn't the same lineup you're going to see in 20, you know, in 4 years in the World Cup or even 8 years in the World Cup. Some of these players will still be there. Some will fall away. And I'd much rather the U.S. try to different things and expand the pool and just open themselves up to finding something that works rather than just be conservative and just try and get the win and win the talking points after the match.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, like I said already, you know, there should be some tinkering going on here. There has to be some tinkering going on. I just feel like Sarakin kind of missed the boat here. I believe that, sadly. You know, look, like I said, I understand he wants to win, and I understand he wants to get his first win in 2018, and that's okay, and I understand that. But, you know, we can still see some players here, you know, get subbed in. Pardon me, you know, get them subbed in and play a little more earlier than normal. I mean, you know, looking at the box score right now, I mean, Roldan got a minute, and that's not a big deal. Roldan, you know, whatever. Weah only got 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Rubio Rubin got 23 minutes. And Andrea Novakovic only got 13 minutes. I mean, you know, why is it Rubin gets 23 minutes, Novakovic only gets, you know, 10 of those, and Weah only gets 4, and Roldan, you know, you're just throwing him out there for the hell of it because it's, I'll just throw you in there just because I want to. You know, that I'm not saying, you know, what's right or wrong, but the truth is that, come on. You know, I mean, for goodness sakes, you know, let some of these kids get more than just 20 minutes in a match like this. They needed more minutes than this. I mean, everyone wants to see them play. And You know, we're not going to see Eric Lehi, obviously, because he's just going to warm the bench. You know, the instructions, in my view, were not really that clear. I personally believe the instructions were not clear. And whether, you know, Carlos Cordero is happy with what he's seen or the board is happy with what they have seen, the truth is that, you know, if you are trying to get, you know, fans excited about the new blood that's coming through the pipeline, then for goodness sakes, you know, just, you know, put them out there. Let them get more than what you're going to give them, because it's only right and it's only fair. I mean, how many times are we going to – I mean, I don't want to rehash the whole thing about, you know, what happened down in Trinidad and Tobago this past October. But the truth is that, you know, if Sarakin's not going to do the job in bleeding in the kids, you know, who are going to be subbing into these second halves, you know, and seeing what they're going to do, well, then what's the freaking point? Then Sarakin is not fit to be the manager of the national team. And whatever he thinks that he's done good enough with, you know, you can make an argument that, okay, he's done some good things with the starting 11s. I think so far his starting 11s haven't been that bad. But when you need to make a substitution, whether it's, you know, you're in a position where you want to add more offense, or, you know, you're behind by a goal, you're behind by two goals, you need to see how Starikin's going to have to, you know, adapt to world football. And we're not talking about club versus club. We're talking about, you know, being a national team head coach. And if you're not going to do the job, then step aside and let someone else take over.
Yeah. We're getting the quotes now out of the press conference, the post-game press conference. And one of the things that strikes me, I just saw a quote from Sarakin saying here about Timothy Weah. He said he was nervous. He was really nervous. He should have been nervous. This was a good debut for him. I mean, that kind of struck me, because it's like, yeah, he was nervous, and you gave him a couple minutes. I'm not understanding, if he's nervous, why giving him 4 minutes is going to help him. I mean, I guess the idea being that, well, he's on the field, so everything's good now. But, I mean, he's the kind of guy that really would have benefited from playing tonight. And, you know, getting, you know, trying to get a couple of goals for the U.S. I mean, it's this kind of mentality where it's like we're almost checking the box in this match, which is kind of disappointing. And some of these players, you know, that you mentioned really should have gotten a chance. I mean, I think the hard case here coming out of this match, the player we have to have a tough conversation about, you know, we talk about these strikers coming on and getting, you know, these forwards coming on and getting a couple of minutes here and there, but let's have I think we need to have a tough conversation about Bobby Wood, because Bobby Wood's in the unenviable position where he's struggling to get time for a not great team in a very good league. So he, you know, he hasn't scored since August for Hamburg, and is spent most of the season on the bench. Normally, the national team is a good opportunity for him to kind of gain some confidence and get some playing time and things like that. But I really do have to wonder, with the U.S. where it is, which is really struggling to have depth at striker and at forward. You know, you have Josie Altidore, who's a good player. And then after him, there's question marks. There's some names thrown in there, but there's a lot of question marks in this position. Does it benefit the U.S. to have Bobby Wood playing for most of the match and not subbing him out and bringing in a Novakovic earlier, a Rubin earlier, a Weah earlier, or some of these players to see if they can contribute in that area? And it's a tough conversation, because Bobby Wood's undoubtedly he's a talented player. And strikers are notoriously streaky, and when they're hot, they're really hot. And we've seen Bobby Wood when he's playing well. But I kind of wonder, in a match like this, you know, after 45, 50 minutes, if the best thing for the U.S. is to just bring him off and see if somebody else can play in that position. But, I mean, I think these are the kind of tough conversations we're going to have with the U.S. national team, especially once we get past this World Cup. You know, we're going to have some veteran players that aren't in their past their prime, but how loyal do we need to be to them and to their careers? Or do we have to start looking at some of these younger players and pushing them forward? And again, I think a match like this where you see the majority of the starting 11 playing doesn't help that, because some of these players really some of these other players really should have gotten more minutes and had a chance to you know, play around, I think, with the player pool for the U.S.
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, once again, Bobby Wood, which, look, I understand you're going to need some veteran leadership. And even though Bobby – it's amazing to call Bobby Wood a veteran, because, you know, if you normally have Jozy Altidore out there, Michael Bradley out there, and Clint Dempsey out there, you know, Bobby Wood is basically, you know, the young kid that gets an opportunity to scrap and get a goal. But, you know, when you've got these kids that have been successful – and let's be honest here, Robert, last year was very successful for these kids, under-20s, under-17s, the under-20s winning the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying tournament for the first time ever for the under-20s, the under-17s going to the final in the same qualifying year, and, you know, just maybe a penalty shy of winning the darn thing over Mexico. But still, though, you have to say that these kids – are the future. It's time to bleed them in. And yeah, I even questioned the amount of minutes that Bobby Wood got. And, you know, as we go back to the box score here, I mean, Bobby Wood gets 77 minutes. I just don't understand it. I mean, look, not saying that, you know, I want Bobby Wood to be over and done with, but at least he deserved at least an hour out there. I think adding on past the hour mark was absolutely the wrong thing for Sarokin to do. And, you know, look, we're criticizing Sarokin, obviously, because he didn't adjust his tactics. He didn't adjust the substitutions. He didn't adjust in the second half. I thought he did a great job in the first half. Obviously a little bit sloppy in the first half after the first opening 15 minutes, but other than that, you know, everything was fine. And, you know, he got them to, you know, refocus and get re-energized and go out there. I felt Darlington Nagbe stayed in there way too long. He almost went the distance, and he, in my opinion, he should have been subbed out. I thought Nagbe really should have been subbed out, and then you throw in a Rubio Rubin, or, you know, maybe even a Weah a lot earlier than that. So, I mean, you know, once again, we're not – it's not that we're disgusted with a 1-0 victory. It's nice that they got the 1-0 victory. But still, though, if we're going to give these kids an opportunity – as we're probably just, you know, going to be blue in the face about it, there has to be an opportunity for everyone to get a chance to sub in. Eric Palmer Brown, we might have gotten an opportunity. Shaquille Moore may have gotten an opportunity. And Anthony Robinson probably deserved an opportunity. But you know what? It's fine. You know, you want to throw in who you want to throw in. It's okay. But make sure that these players get an opportunity in the second half, because you basically, you know, four out of the six subs being used, or at least four subs being used when you have six. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I think it what will be telling will be, you know, as you know the months go on, you know, what the roster, you know, what the who gets playing time where. I mean, I think we can be accused of overreacting a little bit to some of these matches. I don't know. I think that. I don't know if I feel – I wouldn't feel that way, but the accusation can be made. But I think what will be interesting to see is, you know, after this one match, you know, who gets playing time versus Ireland? Who gets playing time versus Bolivia? Who gets playing time versus France? You know, with the European matches being in, you know, being in Ireland and France. And, you know, I think we need to find a consistent pattern here. So let's see what the pattern looks like, you know, over these next few matches. And you know, are we going to see the same kind of players playing over and over again? Are we going to see senior team players come in and start playing, you know, resume the roles that they had, you know, before the Trinidad and Tobago debacle? So I think that when I'll speak for myself, you know, when I sit here and I'm criticizing the substitution patterns and the tactics and strategy, I do it with the caveat that this is one match and we very well could see an entirely different starting 11 and philosophy, and that experimentation might take place over a series of months rather than, you know, just this one game. But I do say with, you know, not a lot of confidence after this match that we're going to be seeing a lot of diverse pairings. It almost reminded me a lot of the Bruce Arena era, which is reliance on players that you know so well and the fear of putting in players who you don't trust or don't know or don't have as much experience with. And again, a match that doesn't mean anything. The people in the stadium have paid for their tickets. You know, Fox has paid for the rights to broadcast this game. You know, I guess long-term you're hurt if you get blown out or you get embarrassed a little bit, but I don't know. I just don't see people tearing up their tickets and their scarves and saying, I'm never watching a U.S. men's national team again if they struggle rotating in and out players and trying a few different things. I think that's just my frustration. It just seems like in this one match there was a desire to win the talking points afterwards and try and build a little bit of momentum rather than trying to build a better foundation in the future.
No, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be overly critical here. I mean, obviously, look, I think right now the first step has been completed so far. I think kids are getting an opportunity, you know, and I mean, look, you say what you want. It'd be nice to see Christian Pulisic out there, but we kind of understand why he's not, because, you know, we don't need to see him.
Mm-hmm.
We know the future that he brings for this national team down the road. And could you imagine it? Can you imagine it to see him with players in front of him like Tim Weah? And at the same time, you know, either next to him or behind him would be Tyler Adams. And then on the back line, you've got Matt Miazga, who had a very good matchup. I thought he had a very, very solid, great match. One issue, of course, was that little turnover. I don't think he was ready for the ball, but he should have been ready for the ball. But still, though, outside of that, I thought he played strong. He didn't allow any of his markers to escape his sight or his section of the field, where he just stole the ball, he blocked the ball, he took the ball away. And I thought Matt Miazga did very well. I thought that back line was solid. I thought that back line was solid with Carter Vickers, Villafana, Yedlin, which, of course, you know, Yedlin's very chippy when you start messing with him. You don't want that. You don't want to get a boot stuck up your backside, that's for sure, if you're going to mess around with DeAndre Yedlin. But still, though, I thought that back line looked solid. I thought they looked very strong. I thought they played very good. I don't think Stefan had that much of an issue in goal. I think most of the chances that he stopped were, you know, easy chances, nothing spectacular. But other than that, you know, I thought the back line did very strong. They were strong as well.
Mm-hmm. I thought the U.S. definitely had a very good defensive night. Stefan, I thought, had a good night. I mean, he wasn't he was very conservative, and that's fine. He didn't need to do anything crazy, and again, was very solid. I do think the back line played well. Like with Villafana and Yedlin ranged forward a little bit and were able to get away with that. And the center back pairing that you mentioned certainly, I think, played well. It's funny, I watch a lot of Borussia Dortmund, you know, in the Bundesliga, and one of the ongoing problems is, you know, the communication between the keeper and the center back pairing. And, you know, the U.S. national team with the center back pairing that's played together, you know, maybe a match and some practices, had better communication and a better time working together than a lot of professional teams where the center back pair and the keeper are working together more often. So a nice little testament, salute to them. But, you know, I certainly think that I think we've all been – I know, Daniel, you know Matt Miazga very well.
Of course.
You know, Cameron Carter-Vickers has had a lot of hype around him. He has, you know, he's in Europe trying to get playing time over there. And of course, went over with Spurs and everything like that. But, you know, I think that they showed a lot tonight. And I certainly think that if you look ahead to the next World Cup, both of them are certainly in the conversation for potentially starting 4 years from now. And, again, just from this one game, they certainly helped their cause in that case.
Yep, absolutely. So obviously, first of all, let me just publicly thank Robert for both guests. Of course, obviously, Motorik FC was his big get to tell me to bring him on, and which I did. And, of course, Mr. Tebow, a very, very, very energetic man, was very happy to be on my show. Coach Reed Maltby joining me. Of course, you and him do your youth soccer podcast called Shot Fired. Is that what it is? Shot Happens? Is that the name of the show?
Shot Happens. Yep, exactly.
Shot Happens. So let me ask you this, because I got his end of things, and I know you're happy to hear him talk about it, and you agree with most of the stuff he says, because he is your co-host. But, you know, seeing this match tonight, and, of course, talking about, you know, where is the next level of player coming from? Where are these players coming from? In your mind, has U.S. soccer, I'm not saying they fixed the problem, because there's still some issues out there, I think we can all agree with, that they need to reassess their situations. But let me just say this. Do you believe at this moment in time that they are on the right track, or it's too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I think the U.S. has the ability to fix a lot of the issues that are facing it. I mean, the U.S. is blessed with the fact that we have a large population, a diverse population, and a population that, for the most part, has disposable income to spend on sports and training kids and providing, you know, top-notch facilities and things like that, for the most part. Well, I'll make a very general statement. As a first world country, a large first world country, I mean, we have the resources to build a successful youth sports culture without, you know, bankrupting the country and so forth. I think the problem is we still have this mentality of, and this is true of all sports. You know, I know Kartik is, you know, frequent guest. Kartik Krishnayer is a big college basketball fan. I am as well. There's this mentality in sports, all sports these days, to rank everything and everyone. And you're now looking at, especially, you know, in the basketball example, you're looking at freshmen and eighth graders that are now being ranked. You know, this is the number one eighth grader in the country and things like that. And we have this mentality now in youth sports where we start segregating kids at the earliest possible age. And once we do that, we don't tend to reevaluate ourselves. It's once you're in this upper echelon of talent, you move around in this upper echelon, but you're considered an upper echelon talent. And I think one of the problems that we have with soccer in this country is we don't have a clear system of identifying talent outside of the structure that we create. And so U.S. soccer creates a structure where it evaluates talent. And, you know, if you look at the game notes, from the lineup notes from this match, the second talking point beside the cap numbers is 7 of the starting 11 are products of the U.S. Soccer Development Academy. And that's great, but, you know, I would be much more impressed if, you know, of the 11, all of them came from different academies and different places and different walks of life. I think we still have this problem in this country of we still focus on this top 1% of talent and developing them and making sure that they're ready for the next World Cup or to be the next superstars in the NBA or, you know, so forth. When really what we need to do is start the U.S., if we go back to soccer, the U.S. really needs to start focusing on how can we let soccer players, youth soccer players, succeed in a way that works for them, it fits for them. You know, if we have a player who's not quite ready to be, you know, the next World Cup star, but he's 11, you know, is he forgotten or is she forgotten? Or is there a way that they can, you know, continue to remain in the system and develop and, you know, maybe one day make that breakthrough? Or are they done because they haven't been identified by 11 and they're not in a U.S. soccer development academy? So I think we're still seeing this problem where there's this tend to focus on the top 1%, 2% of the world and not worry about the rest of it. Whereas really we have as a U.S. the ability to have a good, diverse soccer culture where players, the best players can come from anywhere and should be coming from everywhere. every type of academy, every type of soccer club, and so on and so forth. And we should be supporting them no matter where they come from. And I think that's the big thing that really U.S. soccer needs to think about is, you know, we need U.S. soccer needs to get over this fact that if a player develops in something that's not a development academy or IMG or somewhere like that, it's okay. You know, they can come into the national team and contribute. You know, if there is a 13-year-old who's not on the number one team but's on the number two team, you know, does their club have the ability to keep that player engaged? And if they physically develop or mentally develop at 14 when their teammates don't, you know, and can even themselves out with the best of the best, you know, because that player gets the support. So Reed does a much better job of articulating this than I do, but I don't agree with him on everything. On this one, I do agree with. I do think that in the soccer structure in this country, it's too much of a mess, and there's too much of defending different institutions' turf, and there should be more you know, working together to try and make soccer an enjoyable sport for everyone. I mean, I think the best example of that is you just look at the number of acronyms in youth soccer these days and figuring out which league is good for players and so on and so forth. And it's an absolute mess as a parent and someone who's interested in youth soccer. So the short answer is the U.S., I think, has the ability to make these changes that are necessary, and you see some positives, you know, even in this match, but I think there's still a long way to go.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I have to say, though, you know, once again, the situation is just, you know, very, very interesting to see and very interesting to watch. And all you can do is just look at what goes on here and, you know, how much more of, you know, you might say, how this situation has unfolded. And now these kids, you know, like, if you think about it, maybe a blessing in disguise to get these kids this opportunity to go out and, you know, find a way to get them minutes and just to, you know, put them up against teams that either they're doing the same thing themselves or, you know, someone that's already established. And, you know, going out there and, you know, find a way to just keep on going, I guess, you know, just to keep on going and give these kids an opportunity. Because let's be honest with ourselves here. We don't need to see Michael Bradley right now. We don't need to see Jozy Altidore. We don't need to see, you know, any of these types of, you know, players play for the national team this year. Now, if you want to, you know, throw them into the mix, like, let's say, the second half of this calendar year, then, you know, fine, so be it. But still, though, it's just a situation where we just don't need to watch them right now. Let them stay with their clubs. Let U.S. soccer do what they need to do and, you know, go forward and just keep on bleeding in these young players.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think at one point during this match, JP Della Camera mentioned, you know, that the U.S. might bring in some of these senior players just to provide a little bit of guidance and leadership. And my first thought was, oh, you know, that's nice. I mean, that's good. You know, you probably want, you know, Michael Bradley to come in and work with Tyler Adams and some of these other players and, you know, get them used to, you know, the idea of you know, how do you play for a national team versus a club team? How do you prepare to go to, you know, Guatemala and Jamaica and things like that? When you're used to playing in New York and, you know, Dallas. But the concern I have is the temptation is always there to play them. I mean, if you bring in a Michael Bradley, you're probably going to play him. And if you bring in a Jozy Altidore, you're probably going to play him. And like you said, that's fine if it's, you know, getting a couple minutes, you know, here and there just to stay fresh with the national team and to gel with some of these players and things like that. But at this point, I'd rather have those kind of players trying to improve themselves on their club teams because we know what they do at the international level, whether we like it or not. And we don't need to keep seeing them over and over again. We've seen what they do. not always great, as we now see, not missing the World Cup. But, you know, I'd rather see them behind the scenes and training with some of the players that are eventually going to replace them and should be challenging them for a starting job, rather than seeing them get 60, 70 minutes a night. And, you know, it's probably unfair to Dave Sarakan and the current coaching staff, but my fear with them is that's what's going to happen, is it's that reliance on the players that they know to come in and perform is gonna be too overwhelming, and that's what we're gonna see over and over again.
Yeah, so let's see what happens there, and I love it. Here's I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter. It's kind of funny. Apparently, it says Tyler Adams is the greatest U.S. men's national team player alive, and basically it's. First, it's a still photo of Christian Pulisic in front of the American flag, and then Tyler's photo comes out of nowhere and, like, shoves Pulisic to the side, and Tyler's like, yeah!
No, I'll have to look that one up.
Okay. Well, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's funny. It's really, really funny. I like it a lot, and I think it's really honest, and, you know, what we're seeing here, you know. I mean, look, I mean, it's great to know that, you know, Pulisic is the future for the offense. And obviously Tyler Adams, I think he's the future for not just the defense but for the offense as well. But let me say this, though, because you're right. We need to see what Michael Bradley can do with some of these kids. You know, he's played against Tyler Adams already a couple of times last year in league play. But, you know, I've felt that, you know, Michael Bradley should no longer be coming in from a deep midfield role. And I think he should be more behind the strikers, in the middle of the pitch, you know, in a 4-4-2. If you want him to be, you know, with Pulisic on the left or on the right, and you have Bradley in the middle, up behind the strikers, now you've got Tyler Adams. And Tyler Adams can come back and be a box-to-box midfielder. He can definitely score. He can definitely attack. And he can defend. And I think right now for Michael Bradley, if you're going to have both Adams and Bradley on the same pitch, starting 11 at the same time, I really believe that for Michael Bradley's sake, he has to be higher up and he has to be thinking offense only. Because if he's coming in from a deep midfield position, I'm sorry, it just doesn't work anymore. How tired is he going to be when you get to the 70th minute or even before the 70th minute? You need someone like Tyler Adams, not just so much because he's younger, but because he has displayed that he can be that box-to-box midfielder that you need to play both offense and defense.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest benefit to having a Tyler Adams on this in this setup is, you know, his flexibility and his ability to play a couple of different positions, to high work rate, the ability to play back, move forward, and everything like that. I think the big question, though, to answer that is you know, what's the style of this U.S. men's national team? And that'll obviously get revealed a little bit more when we have a new coach and, you know, new administrators or whatever happens there. But I think that as we go along and we get a setup and that has a tactical style and a strategic sense to it, we'll know more of where Tyler Adams and Michael Bradley and all these guys fit in. I mean, I honestly think that Tyler Adams could even challenge Michael Bradley, depending on who the coach is and everything, because there are some skills that he has that Michael Bradley does not. Even at a young age, that potentially could be very useful for a certain tactical setup. But it's all speculation at this point until we know really, you know, who the manager is going to be, what kind of system he likes to play, who he wants to have on the field, and that kind of thing. But I think the nice thing is, like you said, Tyler Adams does give options. I mean, he's a player that can fit in most systems. You know, he can move around. He's played, you know, wide. He can come off the bench and give energy if he needs to, if there's a certain system that doesn't fit him or something like that. But I think that's the nice thing about having a player like him is, you know, it shows that the U.S. has some depth and the ability to change style and change pace. And I think that's where his real value is. I think he's certainly someone that will be challenging for starting time, and that's going to be invaluable for the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with you there. You know, our buddy Neil Morris, of course, was at Wake Med Soccer Park tonight to watch what was going on there. And you know what? I mean, good for him. He deserves to watch a national team match, covering it for WRALSportsFan.com. You know, let him do his job, obviously. I don't want to interrupt him while he's covering the match. But I will say this, though. That's one of the places I want to get to. I've been already to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I've already been to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, for a couple of, you know, either through Open Cup or just a USL match. But definitely, Wake Med Soccer Park is definitely on my to-do list, and I want to get down there as soon as I can because that's just a fantastic venue. Congratulations to everyone over in Cary, North Carolina. You filled it to the hilt. They deserve a big applause for, you know, filling up Wake Med Soccer Park for this important – it is an important friendly, not because of result-wise, but like we've already said, just to see what these kids can do, and I thought they did a fantastic job so far.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the venue. I mean, Cary, North Carolina showed very well, I thought, on TV. It was a good crowd. It was loud, very involved, and yeah, I think overall it was a good venue for the U.S. I think that's the other nice thing about this time for the U.S. as it experiments and brings in new players is, you know, it's an opportunity for them to do almost a roadshow around the country, go to some of these places that have good soccer culture and, you know, might have an existing smaller level club or lower level club, or a fan base that shows up really well in TV ratings and give them a chance to see the U.S. national team play. Hopefully it's with lower prices than you would with a World Cup qualifier or something like that. But, you know, that's another way you're going to help spread soccer in this country is bringing the senior team around and playing at venues like this. So kids and fans in that part of North Carolina and in that area can come and see them play and say, you know, I was there when, you know, such and such player made his debut and now look at him. He's, you know, one of the best in the world.
He really is, and it's just unbelievable to see. Well, Robert, we're going to call it a night right now because, obviously, this one's in the books. The USA gets their first win of 2018, and even though that doesn't really matter so much, what we did see is we've seen these young kids getting a better opportunity against a good down-the-middle opponent in Paraguay. And, you know, once again, a great opportunity by Marky Delgado to find – Tyler Adams springing him to get to that ball, and of course he gets taken down in the area. And all I can say is that just gotta say, you know, it was just a fun time to see Bobby Woods convert that goal. But overall, I think we've learned a little bit more from some of these kids. Obviously, more needs to get opportunities, but still, though, I think it's a good start.
Absolutely. There's certainly positives, and I think all U.S. national team fans can go to bed tonight feeling a little bit better about the future of the team.
Absolutely. Robert, thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. That's Robert Hay, Shot Happens podcasts on youth soccer, as well as his insights of the game and, of course, occasionally with World Soccer Talk. But talk to you everyone on next week, this coming Monday, this coming next Wednesday, and next Friday. Big games coming up, a big round one draw review show, and back to the grind. Once again, the United States defeating Paraguay by a final of 1-0 on a penalty converted by Bobby Wood. Other than that, it's not a bad night, and could be a little bit better with the substitution-wise, but other than that, I thought everything was just fine. So for Robert Hay, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. And this has been the USA versus Paraguay postgame show here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show here on blogtalkradio.com. Talk to you on Monday. Enjoy your football, and bye-bye for now.